Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Agrotech Foods Limited Q3 FY17 earnings conference call hosted by Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ajay Thakur from Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Hi, friends. Good afternoon to everyone. I welcome you all to Agrotech Foods Q3 FY17 results conference call. From the company, we have with us Mr. Sachin Gopal, Managing Director, and Mr. Arjit Datta, CFO. We shall begin the call with a brief on the Q3 FY17 results and we'll follow it with the Q&A session. I shall like to now hand over the call to Mr. Sachin Gopal. Over to you, sir.
Okay, thank you, Ajay. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you always for taking out the time to participate in the call. We will walk you through the P&L and then open the floor for Q&A as always. We'll try and do the walkthrough as quickly as possible. All right. So I'll first give you the details behind the top line in the areas that you're always interested in. First quarter three, and then we'll do year to date. So in quarter three, on the sundrop oil, in total, we had a volume growth of about 2% and a revenue growth of about 2% as well, right? So that basically means that the pricing that cycled, the revenue growth prior to quarter three was actually ahead of volume growth, has ended, and that's consistent with the current trends in sunflower oil prices and as we expected. In the peanut butter business, we had a volume growth of about 20% and a net sales growth of about 13%. Here, the net sales growth is lagging the revenue growth, the volume growth, largely because we also took some steps. As I mentioned to you earlier, our estimate was that we had lost some share, particularly in the larger packs, like you know the 924-gram pack. And we've taken some actions in terms of that. And I don't expect on an ongoing basis the gap between revenue and volume to be this much. But right now for the quarter, this was it. But it's also a very good sign that we have all the actions that we were taking is enabling us to get back the volume. And we expect that going forward, therefore, we should be able to be ahead of the category goal as we are in the case of snacks. In the active consumer business, it is both ready-to-cook popcorn, ready-to-eat popcorn, extruded snacks, and tortilla chips. We had a volume growth of about 9%. And the revenue growth of about 7%. Right? As you are aware, the revenue growth here is about 200 basis points lower than the volume growth, and that is consistent with the prior quarters as well because of the phasing out of Kashipur. That this comparative situation will end on 31st March, and after that we would expect that revenue and volume should grow in tandem. Ideally, revenue should grow faster than volume, but certainly at least in tandem. Obvious question, therefore, is, you know, is there been some impact of demonetization on the volume? My answer is what I, have always maintained, that we didn't expect demonetization to have any material impact on our business. Probably maybe 150, 200 basis points of growth. In other words, the 9% volume measure of 9 maybe could have been 10.5 or 11. It's difficult to give a very precise number, but as I said, nothing material, right? And I think we've come out of it. One of the questions everybody asks is, what really is the impact of demonetization? And I think the impact of demonetization is governed largely by three parameters. One is what is the day sales outstanding of the company? You know, what is the total credit that you're giving in the market? Obviously, the more credit you're giving in the market, the greater your inventory in the market. The greater your inventory in the market at a time when everybody is cash trapped, the more turns they're going to try and get out of it. So the greater will be the impact of your business. In our case, at 18 days, 17, 18 days, we don't really give that much credit per se. So that's one. Second is, what is the share of wholesale in your business? We are actually probably underfaced in wholesale today. We need to have a larger wholesale presence, right? You know, to get more scaling up in our business. But obviously in this scenario where a greater share of wholesale would have a greater impact on your business because there is one more level of inventory built in. In our case, we were, relatively protected. You know, there would have been some loss in traditional trade, but, you know, got made up to a very large extent by modern trade, so on and so forth. And last is, how deep is the distribution? We are at 250,000 stores of distribution. We certainly don't have the million or 2 million or 3 million that some companies have, right? The greater the depth of your distribution, in our assessment, the greater would have been the impact of demonetization. So in sum, therefore, on both active and peanut butter, probably some impact, but not really material on our business. And, you know, I think we continue to be in reasonable shape, clocking about double-digit growth thereabouts. That really was the total on the strategic parts of our business. On the Crystal business, we had a volume growth of about 14% and a revenue growth of about 10%. And on the vending business, both volume and value declined by about 66%, right? And that is consistent with what it has been in the prior quarters, right? In total, therefore, for the company, for quarter three, we had a volume growth of about 4% and a revenue growth of about 2%. If we translate these figures, therefore, on a year-to-date basis, they are not very different, right? If you could argue 100, 200 basis points, but nothing material. On Sunrock Oils, we have a volume growth of about 1% and a revenue growth of about 3%. On Peanut Butter, a volume growth of 13 and a revenue growth of 10. On Act 2, the consumer snacks business, a volume growth of 10 and a revenue growth of 11. And on Crystal, a volume growth of 3, a revenue growth of 7. And the vending business, the all-in-one popcorn, down about 69%, both in terms of volume and value. So that really explains, I would say, reasonably clearly the top-line performance. So you have a reasonable idea of that. In terms of other areas, as you will go through the P&L of the company, you can see that there's not any significant change in terms of employee benefits and expenses. We've hired a lot more salesmen. I think by the end of the year, we'll invest at least, worse relative to last year, at least another 3 odd crores in terms of feet on street, right? And that's obviously driving growth for us, particularly in the traditional trade. Some change in depreciation and amortization that really reflects as we capitalize on assets, what is the depreciation charge on those. And a little lower A&P, but I think overall, as I mentioned to you earlier also, as we close the end of the year, overall in terms of advertising and promotion, we don't see too much of a change versus last year. It could be a crore here and there, nothing significant. And that really results in the rest of the P&L which goes through. On SG&A, there's therefore hardly any change. In fact, quarter three is a little lower than last year. And therefore, profit before tax is up about 31% in quarter three, 42% for year to date. Profit after tax up about 29% and 34%. So that doesn't mean that, you know, suddenly there is a huge increase in profitability. What this simply means is that some of the costs that we started to digest about 2 years ago, coming out of the huge capex that we've done relative to our book, we are starting to digest and absorb now. And consistent with what we told you this year, that we would like to continue with growth, but we also would like a P&L that, you know, returns to where it was, having digested all these capacities that we've put into the system. Other than that, Ajay, there's not a lot more that I have to say. So, you know, it's only 8 minutes gone. Let's spend the balance of 52 minutes on questions, and, you know, they're all intelligent folks are on the call.
Sure, sir. Stanford, we can begin with the Q&A session.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, you may press star and one. We take our first question from the line of Sameer Gupta from India Infoline. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. Two questions from my side. So the first question would be, could you give a sense of volume and value growth for your snacks business, including the vending business, for the quarter and the full year? And second is your CAPEX. So what is your CAPEX guidance for the full year FY17? I see an approximate CAPEX of around $67 million in first half. So what is this, first of all, understanding correct, and how much was the CAPEX in 3Q and expected in the last fourth quarter? Yeah.
Thanks, Sunny. So I think in total it will be about flattish only, Sunny, right, if you add in. Because, you know, when you take the impact of the 67% decline on the one hand and this 10-11% growth on the other, it's going to be in the flat range, okay? In terms of CAPEX guidance, there's no significant CAPEX, Sunny, that we are doing right now. There were some assets which were there to be capitalized. But other than that, we have actually been in, for some time now, you know, not had any significant capitals. We would, from a capitalization perspective going forward, we would expect to, by some time, end of this year, early next year, we would expect to capitalize the investment that we have made in the Guwahati and the Dhaka plants, both of which are near ready for production. However, the bulk of that investment is in land and building. That will probably be in the range of about 20 odd crores. Not so much in terms of machinery, because machinery is moving around. So therefore, obviously, that attracts a lower rate of depreciation. So I would say CapEx will have a little impact, but not so significant going forward. Right? And that is the reason why also, as you can see from our working capital trends, they're coming rapidly down. As a consequence, both of the reduced inventories on corn and also, of course, on much better borrowing, where we issued commercial paper and got a very good rate. Our interest expenses have been coming rapidly downwards. And I think I've said this earlier and I'll repeat it. I think by sometime around quarter three of next fiscal, we estimate that we should be debt free. And so that's where we are. Yeah?
Thanks, Dr.
You're welcome, sir. Okay.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. We take the next question from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon. Two questions from my side. Firstly, your foods business, including the peanut butter, the vending, everything except your edible oils, if I take, at a EBITDA level and at a EBIT level, would they be break even, or if not, then how far away are we from that point, and is that a time target or is that a turnover target, if you could give some guidance on that? And secondly, for your overall input cost, be it corn or edible oil or whatever it may be, how do you see the cost trends? Do you see any inflation around the corner, and do you envisage any requirement to take price increases? If so, to what quantum do you see the cost inflation? Some color on that as well.
All right. Thanks, Percy. So I think on the foods business, you know, we don't actually break it down in terms of EBITDA by segment, right? But I think I've said this earlier, and I'll repeat it. I think it's at about a 200 crore level, right, that each of these individual lines, like F2, I think at about a 200 crore level, it will start to be, you know, start to have a meaningful profitability, right? So at this point in time, certainly it's profitable at profit before marketing, F2, and certainly it's profitable after the marketing expenses that we make, because those are much lower, right? And after that, really, it's a function of allocation of of expenses. So let's try and give you a perspective. Let's assume that we have a total active business running at about 150 crores, which now obviously has a much greater share of consumer snacks and a much lower share of vending, right? And let's assume we make about a 30% gross margin on that. That will give you about a 45 crores of gross margin, right? So let's assume somewhere in that region, 40, 45 crores of gross margin. And you are aware, we are very transparent with you in terms of our spending. You know that we spend about 13 odd crores. You can visit our website where we posted our November presentation to analysts. Right? You can see that we're spending in the region of about 13 odd crores on advertising. We make a reasonable judgment on sales promotion. Let's assume it's a couple crores more. Right? That means, you know, let's say some of maybe 15, 16 crores. So if you take out, you're probably making after marketing expenses about 30 crores. Right? After that, you can do the maths. You know the employee cost. You know the share of business, and you can do the maths in terms of what is the data. All right? In terms of cost inflation, I would say we have a reasonably good picture. Reason being that we bought a lot of corn, right? So we've gone long on corn. We have about 2 years inventory of corn, and all that is locked in. We know what price it is in. So there's no real change that we see in terms of input change on corn, because we already have it. It's with us. We know what the cost is, and we know how long it's going to take us to exhaust it. So that's reasonably well known. In terms of edible oil, it is entirely subject to market prices and commodity movements, and possibly also exchange rate. But that, you know, we price to market. We buy spot. We don't have long inventory. And we move our pricing in line with cost. Yes, we've been doing that for several years now, right? So I would say, if you ask me, are we very worried on cost? I think the answer probably is no, right? In terms of the first question of profitability of Active, I think our target is clear. We need to get to 500 crores and we need to get it in the right margin profile, right? 30% making 150 crores in gross margin. If we're at 150 crores, our next goals, you know, should be to get to about 200 crores. That should be the kind of range of numbers that we should talk about, right? And certainly at 200 crores, our expectation has always been it'll be a very nice profitable business, okay?
Right, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, boss.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. We take the next question from the line of Yash Zaveri from Alder Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just wanted a data point. Can you tell me what proportion of your sales comes from modern trade and from the military canteens? That's all.
Yeah, so yes, we don't actually share channel-wise sales. So I apologize. I've said it in earlier calls also. We will not share customer-wise details, right? Okay. From a shareholder perspective, I don't think it's in our interest to give that, right? So I can, however, give you a relative picture. So I can say, yes, our contribution on the newer categories will always be more from the modern trade. And that's logical, right? So for a product like peanut butter, the contribution of modern trade will be greater than that on Active, right? Naturally, because the category is less developed, and when categories are new, the share of the modern trade, which is where people go first to try products, so on and so forth, is always higher. The other data point that I can share with you is something that we've uploaded on the website for up to September. So what I can share with you is that for customers who account for about 82% of our modern trade business on Active, the category growth that we get from them is about 13%, and their growth on Active was about 28%, right? So we continue to be growing at about 2x of the category in the modern trade, right? And probably our estimated share in the modern trade will be in the region of about 10%. The other data point that I can give you is on spreads. In spreads, the situation is different from snacks. Whereas in snacks, we are growing at twice the rate of the category. In spreads, the category growth is about 23%, and we are growing at about 21%. This data is for customers who account for 53% of our spreads business. Right? The percentage of customers vary depending on who gives us data and who doesn't give us data. So in spreads, and this is the point that we made last quarter, that we think that we definitely did lose some share. As a consequence of not having the complete price pack architecture, we've taken the actions on that. If you go to the modern trade today or even into HFS, you will see that. And we're starting to close that gap. Okay, and that's reflected in our primary sales numbers also. All right, I apologize again, Yash. Okay.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. We take the next question from the line of Ajay Thakur from Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. I have a few questions. Actually, I wanted to check on the current size of institutional business, if you can share that number. Institutional popcorn vending business, actually, if you can share that number.
Okay.
And secondly, I also wanted to check on the fact that the corn prices have been rising in the current market environment. So given the fact that we have procured the corn at a lower prices, so can we expect that, you know, the vending or the institutional vending popcorn business can see some kind of a revival going forward?
Okay. So our total institutional business, right? So that is vending corn and, you know, vending tortilla, et cetera, right? On a year-to-date basis, we did about close to 8 crores, right? So you can assume, therefore, that on a full year basis, it's in that 10-11 crore range, okay? Right? And you can also work backwards. The decline is about 66-67% in total for both of these businesses, right? So that is roughly translates into the kind of revenue growth that we're getting on the branded part of the business. In terms of the vending business coming back, maybe also. you know, there are terms on which we'll be happy to take it. You are right. It's possible that with exchange rate fluctuations, changes, you know, we might be better priced because we're holding older inventory. At the same time, there is a cost to our holding that inventory, right? Because we've held that inventory for a while. There's a working capital cost, so on and so forth. So we'll also assess it. We want a high-quality business, right? And we want a stable business, right? We want something that, you know, when we report back to the street, we don't have to actually answer a lot of variations, right? And these are not businesses that that give a lot of margin, right? You're selling them at, you know, close to zero margin, right? So we'll see. On the one hand, there is always the temptation to say, you know, we'd like more volume from that so that, you know, we have, you know, we can have run with a lower level of inventory. On the other hand is obviously the, you know, the fact that as you have a greater proportion of this in your business, there's a greater variation. It's almost like a commodity business, right? So those trade-offs are difficult to make. And I don't think we have all the answers in terms of exactly what trade-off we need to make. But broadly, these are the things that are considerations in our mind, right? So we may want it back. We may not want it back. And we are working our way through. Maybe we want some of it back. But I think long-term, we don't want an undue exposure to large commodity businesses. Okay? Right? We want a steadiness in our P&L.
And secondly, I also had one question on the, you know, feet on street part of that thing too. So what kind of, you know, number of people are we looking to add over there? You mentioned something on that front. And in terms of, you know, the increase in distribution, what additional kind of, you know, distribution increase or outlet increase are we targeting for the current year, FY18?
Okay. So just to be respectful to everybody, because you asked it separately, I'll have to take it again at the end. But it's an important subject. In fact, it's someone that I would like to talk about. So with your permission, let's move on to the next Q&A. And Stanford, in the last 5 minutes, I'll give a perspective to everybody on this.
Sure.
That's an important topic. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Parthiv Shah from Tracon Stockbrokers Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for taking my question. So just wanted a sense of your pipeline of new launches, especially in terms of ready-to-eat market, because as I understand, your parent, which is ConAgra, has tons of brands, and especially brands into, for example, now you are into salsa chips, so there is even something like the ready-to-eat salsa, which is by the brand of Frontera. So there are tons of other options like Healthy Choice, the Hunt's Ketchup, even something like a pan non-stick cooking spray oil. So what is your pipeline in terms of the new innovative products, which is less competition? And I see that one of the new products recently introduced was Sundrop Peanuts, but I'm just trying to get a sense, there's a lot of unorganized market in this segment. So why go in for Peanuts, which is already very crowded space, and not go for differentiated products which are already there from your parent company?
Okay. Thank you, Pati. So good question. See, we have said that we will always have between one and two launches, and I think you always see it there, this the case. And it will be the case also in the next 12 months, right? So we actually have a pipeline. There's a significant amount of capital also that we've already invested, right? Which, you know, where lines are in process, they're under testing, so on and so forth. So the answer is yes, you will see it. It may or may not be from the parent company. So your point is right. That we did acquire a company which makes tortilla chips in salsa. And we have actually have salsa manufacturing capabilities. Right. We, in fact, initially when we launched tortilla chips, we put it out with the salsa, but we were having some challenges in terms of the quality of sealing of the packaging that we were doing. So we put it on hold for a while. And certainly, our broader play, given the fact that we want to be leaders in the snacks business, will include products like salsa dips. There's no question about that. The question is what time, therefore, we feel comfortable, right? In terms of focus on which products, it's going to be snacks part. Okay. The parent company's focus is on snacks, not only in India, but across our international business. And that's correct, right? I mean, snacks is the fastest growing market, right, worldwide. I think the estimate for last year on the snacks business is about now up to about 25 or 28,000 crores, something like that. That's the last figure that we saw. And I think they're projecting that it will be a 45,000 crore market, right, in some years' time. So, you know, it's certainly it's the right place for us to be in. Your point is right. In the long term, we will make margin only if we are working with differentiated products with some competitive advantage and right to win. Having said that, to set up a supply chain for these competitive advantage products, which which is viable, you do need as a combination a supply chain built up of products which compete at the bottom of the pyramid. So let me elaborate. Let's say you want to launch Honey Roasted Peanuts. Now, Honey Roasted Peanuts is a differentiated product, top of the pyramid, so on and so forth, no problems. However, because the quantities initially will be small, you will be unable to launch a product like that unless you already have a built-in supply chain of peanuts, right? So that's why we define what we call margin drivers and volume drivers. Margin drivers are those that will produce margin for the company. Volume drivers are those which will give scale. Initially, a lot of products will be volume drivers. Over time, as we get efficiencies of scale, they'll become margin drivers. Why will we get efficiencies? Because we'll get better at manufacturing them. Our production planning will be better. Our losses will be better. Our absorption of manufacturing will be better. Our labor and energy costs will be lower. And our laminate purchase costs will be lower as we get scale. So you need both ends. In our entire portfolio, in fact, both in oils and in foods, you will find we are competing at both ends of the market. You are competing with a lot of volume drivers, but we need those volume drivers because without them, we don't get scale. Right, and that's critical for us. So in fact, this is a good way to also answer the question Ajay raised, because I can blend it into this. We're making a lot of investment in people, right? Because we did a lot of capex, and as I said, this year we'll be, you know, I think investing at least 3 more crores, between 3 and 4 crores. I'll give you the final number at the end of the year on people, on just feet on street. This is driven by the fact that we now have the capacity. We have a very nice portfolio. But we need to accelerate the rate at which we get scale and are able to produce large volumes at our plants, so that we are able to bring the cost structure to what we want it to be. Right. So to get that scale, these volume drivers are essential. However, once you get that scale, the benefit of that is your distributor's turnover increases, his interest in your business increases, you are able to go to more towns, as we correctly discussed earlier. One of the reasons demonetization has less impact on our business is our penetration is less. But is it a good thing for our penetration to be less? The answer is no. Right? Just because it did better for taking demonetization doesn't mean that's the case. We need to penetrate. We have a long runway for growth. So in many towns, as we grow, the initial push will be with volume drivers. This will increase our scale. It will enable us to place our margin drivers, ready to cook popcorn, nachos, peanut butter, and many new products. Right? But there is a clear role for each one of these. So I hope that answered your question.
Yes, sir. Okay. Absolutely. Thank you for a very descriptive answer. Also, sir, I wanted to get a sense about your ad spend. Because, yes, your brands like Sundrop Oil and Acto Popcorn are very strong, have a very strong brand recall. But all your new launches like the Acto Nachos, Acto Bakes, all that, it seems that, you know, it does not really ring well to the normal consumer. And probably they are not aware of that such products also exist under the Acto brand. So what is your ad spend strategy going ahead?
Okay, so Patrick, what I'll do is, again, to be respectful for everybody, I'll take this at the end of the course. Okay?
No problem, sir. Definitely not a problem.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. We take the next question from the line of Manish Poddar from Religare Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Just wanted to understand something on the edible oils category at large. So, would you be able to share, let's say, you know, in the edible oil category, you know, products which are available about rupees 90 per liter, how much would their share be of, you know, channel sales through modern trade, let's say today versus 3 years ago? And then I have a couple more. Just wanted to understand what is, you know, when you say SKU-wise, how much, and I'm just talking about the market large, not, you know, Sundrop in specific. So how much would be the contribution of, let's say, 1 liter packs and 5 liter packs, if you could dwell some thought on that? And the third one, primarily just wanted to understand, among your Sundrop portfolio, are you over-indexed towards any of the variants? So let's say Sundrop Light, Heart. So probably if you could give us the pecking order, I don't want the, you know, breakup, but if you could give the pecking order, and is there any difference, material difference between the margin profile of the variants? Any thoughts on that would be helpful.
Okay, thank you. So, Manish, we don't actually buy any data. So, you know, I won't be able to actually give you any reliable data. As you know, we've not got audit data for more than a year. I think possibly it's getting on to 2 years now. Right? So, I really won't be able to give you the data. I think contextually, I think we can say that Between Americo and us, from the last year I remember, I don't think together we had more than 4% of the edible oil market, right? So you can expect that the bulk of the market is at 90 rupees per liter. Is it a little less in modern trade? Probably it will be. Is it 95? No. But is it, well north of 80-85%? I think my belief answer would be yes. In terms of the SKU's contribution, yes. I think the dominant share will be the 1 liter pack. Again, as I said, we haven't bought data for a while. And, of course, there is also a large part which goes into bulk pack, which is also the more commoditized end of the business where you have even lower the pricing power. Okay. In terms of our variant, see how we break it up is in our businesses, we break it up by what we call the Sunrop margin drivers and what the Sunrop volume drivers. Right? Margin drivers are where we make a respectable margin which enables us to keep the business going. And volume drivers obviously what enables us to continue to hold the margin, to ensure that our distributor business is growing, right? And also that our factories are producing efficiently, right? Exactly the same answer that I had given to Parthiv on food, that logic also applies to the oil business. So I would say between the margin drivers and the volume drivers, probably the margin drivers are about 55-60%, right? Okay. And the volume drivers are the lower part, right? However, it is also a fact that our margin drivers have been declining steadily, right? So while overall you might be running at 101-102 index, the way the algorithm has worked over the years is we do have a volume decline in the margin drivers and we make it up with the volume drivers, right? So that, and in total, therefore, we are kind of almost able to hold our gross margin, right? With very little, with minimized attrition. That's so, it is possible and likely that this over time will change, and at some point in time the volume drivers may become bigger than the margin drivers. The same is, however, not true in value or revenue, right? In revenue terms, I would say it's about the revenue that we derive from the margin drivers will be more than double of what we derive from the volume drivers, right? So in other words, it will be well north of 66%. Probably it could be in the 65-70%, something like that. Okay, and that's a function of pricing, because obviously the margin drivers are priced higher. They'll be priced all with an MRP of about 200 rupees per liter, and even after you discount the 20% off that we give, we are still talking about 160 rupees a liter, which actually makes Sunrop really the premium edible oil in the country. Okay.
Just to interrupt. So first thing, is the 1 liter pack contribution would be roughly more than 40% in your view?
100%. It will be the dominant share.
Okay.
Maybe 70%.
Second thing, just in simple terms, among the 4-5 variants which you have in Sunrop, would any of the variants be contributing, let's say, more than 40 or 45% of your total Sunrop portfolio?
So the dominant contribution will come from Sunrop Superlight, right? Okay.
Okay.
The blue pack, yeah.
And which will be the second and the third, just in the order?
So after that, I would say that there'll be Sunrop Heart, there'll be some of the other volume drivers, but there will be a distant 2 to 3. Okay.
Okay, fine. That's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Pavan. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participants, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Ajay Thakur from Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. Please go ahead.
Ajay, if it's okay with you, can I answer a Parthiv question and then you can do your comments?
Sure, sir. We also have few questions from Sirish.
Then you ask the question and then I'll do Parthiv.
Yeah, hi Sachin, Arijit, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Parthiv.
Congratulations for impressive numbers. I have 4 questions. The first question is that Jill Rehman has come on the board. So any quick take, interaction, what is it? Is there any flow of products? That's the first question. Second question is that you said something on Bangladesh. So I'm basically interested on 2 points. One is when the commercial production will start and how big that business would be. What are the products which you're going to launch or what you're going to manufacture there? The third question is on the new launches, what you've mentioned during our last analyst meet. So is that these products will get launched in next 2 quarters? If not, what stops us? And the fourth question is that if you can share the net wetted distribution for tortilla chips and Act 2 ready to eat.
Okay. Thank you, Sid. So first part on Jill's coming, it's obviously very good for the business. Prior to this, Jill was the president of our snacks business in the US, right? So she's very familiar with our entire snacks business that includes popcorn, pudding, you know, whole host of products. Right? This is very good for us because, you know, she's just moved from that business. So, you know, we get the benefit of all the IPR and the knowledge that she has on the snack business and also on consumer trends in the US, right? That doesn't mean that India will follow the US in terms of consumer trends, but at least we have a detailed insider understanding of the US trends, which otherwise we would only have through, you know, reading material in the public domain. So that's very useful for us. On your second question in terms of Bangladesh, see, the Bangladesh plant has two roles. One role is clearly that it is a contingency supply point for us, so that any point in time we need to import finished goods, we are able to import it from Bangladesh. Right? That was a big part of the reason why we made the investment in Bangladesh. The second part was obviously that for Bangladesh is a large market. We have a little business there, but it's a very, very small business, right? But yes, we have distribution. If you go to Dhaka, for example, you'll find we are in all the modern trade, we'll be in some of the larger HFS stores, right? But we still have to get scale in Bangladesh. So the second part is obviously once we set up the facility and commercialize it, how do we use it to service Bangladesh and have a cost-effective structure? So the products that we are looking at right now are basically in the popcorn domain, right? So it could be ready to cook popcorn, ready to eat popcorn. Some of the machinery is already there. Right, and I think in terms of timing, you can assume that it will happen sometime in the first quarter or the second quarter of next year, right? But first quarter probably we will start at some stage commercial production there, right? And that will probably include both. We may do some test runs of product importing into India, and at the same time something in Bangladesh itself, right? In terms of the new launches, they'll happen in FY18 for sure. It's all work in progress, right? And in the food business, you know, one of the things you need is you need successful products. You know, the cost of launching a product is suboptimal and then redoing it and redoing it is far too heavy, both in terms of the financial cost and the organizational energy. So I would say reasonably, if I had to put a number, we would like to have both the new launches next year, which is two new products, right? They are not variants of existing products. We would expect reasonably that we should make some entry in the first half of the year, right? But remember, bear in mind that a lot of these don't materially change our life. It's just that they start setting the stage for being a very, very diversified snacks player. So let me give an example. If you take tortilla chips, we started selling maybe in the second half of last year, right? However, we started advertising it only in April this year, right? And, now it's becoming a nice business. We have a reasonable share. We have between 15 and 20% of the tortilla chips market. So, it takes a little time to build out here, right? So, I would say in our budgeting, we don't assume actually that these new products are going to change. When we make a budget for next year, we don't say, oh, by the way, there's going to be so much contribution from these products. These are there. Work is being done. And they'll be launched whenever we think we can make them cost-effectively and we have a winning product. Okay. In terms of the net distribution of tortilla chips and ready-to-eat popcorn, I don't have any Nielsen data to share with you. However, I would say probably for tortilla chips, if I had to make a reasonable estimate, I think it would be about 20,000-25,000 stores today, not less than that. Right? It could even be a little more. Ready-to-eat popcorn is probably, I would say, maybe in the same ballpark. The only difference is on ready-to-eat popcorn now for some time, we'll be getting some indirect distribution, which I'm not able to give you a precise number on, right? So what's happened is that, and I think this is a good way for me to answer one of the other unanswered questions on Freetown Street, which Ajay had asked. We added about 200 people last year on company roles, right, which is the model followed by most Indian companies to drive distribution. It gave us a very good return in the traditional trade. This year what we did is we said in the retail part of the business, we will get these people to hand over their beads to people on distributor payroll, and then so that they can add more beads. On a year-to-date basis, I think we've already handed over more than 100 beads, more than 100, 120 beads probably in that region to distributors. So our estimate is somewhere between 140, 150 beads we will hand over, right? And that enables us to get these retail people to count company payroll to open new beads, continue to open new beads. Around 6 months ago, or 4 to 6 months ago, we said this has worked very well for us in retail. Can it do well for us in wholesale, right? Because as I said earlier, we are under-faced in wholesale. And we, particularly for 5 rupees snacks, right? Because, you know, it's an ocean, right? If the snacks market becomes 45,000 crores, maybe 30,000 crores of that will be just 5 rupee packs, right? And you don't get scale unless you complete your 5 rupees. So we said, okay, you know, can we apply this model in wholesale? And we've been doing that, and it's actually come out very well. Today, we have more than 50 to 60 people in wholesale. I was in the market yesterday. We're doing very well. And so I think, probably ready-to-eat popcorn today is small, maybe 25,000-30,000 stores. But if our wholesale strategy works, and we also launched the new 5 rupees extruded last week, this could grow very rapidly, right? We'll never be able to give you a precise number. But what I'll do is from next four numbers, I'll give you a perspective on number of wholesalers that we are now into. And from that, we can make a reasonable judgment on how many retailers roughly in terms of consumption per month to give you a figure. But it will be a assumption figure, okay?
I think there are no more questions, so maybe I'm a little excited on the same discussion. So basically what I intend to ask is that at this point of time, our wholesale contribution would be marginally very, very low. Now, if the product has to move and if there is an acceptance, and I think now you've proven that there is a right to win into that category, I'm talking about ready to eat, why can't you explore the outright exploitation of wholesale channel?
Yeah, so it's a huge opportunity for us, 100%. It's a huge opportunity, and obviously enables us to scale up very, very rapidly. The critical thing for wholesale is value proposition. You need to have your value proposition absolutely right, right? It's not so much a function of media-driven, and it's obviously the least profitable end of the market, but it will give us scale. So, as I said earlier, we are waiting. We've done part of it. Our expectation is that we will have 5 plants of ready-to-eat popcorn by April next year, right? That's not 7 that we'd like to have, but it's 5. So it's a long way. And with that, we'll have virtually coverage across the north, across the west, and part of the south, and mostly we will cover the east, barring one or two states. So we will actually, and also we are moving some equipment, other equipment to Guwahati. So we will have an extruded snacks manufacturing capability in Guwahati, which is the line we're moving from elsewhere. That's why the capex is not going up that much. And these combined efforts should give us a presence in about, I would say, 70% of the country. We will have cost-effective presence where we are very, very close to market. If we are able to crack this along with a larger wholesale presence, and that's the discussion and conversation that we had at the board meeting this time, so we are conceptually aligned at the board that we are going to deploy even more people, both in retail and wholesale. We may add another, I would say, 200 people next year, right? This year, as I said, we would have added about already 150 in wholesale, 100 odd people in retail, which is the conversion that we've done. Let's assume by the end of the year it becomes 150, say about 200 to 220 people. And next year we would be looking to add another 200 to 250 people, right? And those are big numbers, right? Because that's more than a 20% increase in feet on street. But obviously the wholesale part is the impact of that in terms of revenue and top line and volume is far bigger, right? Because the part is much simplified. Our person goes, takes the order, and distributor simply has to make the delivery. Then you're not worried about, you know, does the capacity of the unit, et cetera, et cetera. Because for the distributor is viable, it's a single drop as compared to multiple drops, right? So let's see. I think we are doing all the right things, and we'll keep you posted. Yeah.
Anfred, is there any other questions?
No. Shall I make an announcement here?
Yes, sir.
Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and 1.
Okay, I think we can choose. We can close.
Let me ask one last question.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what I wanted to understand, now you have done Act 2, you have done Tortilla. So there is a significant experience over last 10 years you would have got in food business. My just general sense, what I wanted to check, in India when we launch a new product, Is it something different? Will take a little longer time, or basically, I'm looking for an answer. In what time frame, since the product is launched, it will become EBITDA positive?
Yeah. So I think my answer is clear that, you know, let's say something like Actu is probably, you know, already EBITDA positive. I've already given you the numbers and you know our SG&A, right? So it's already. But I think to be a profitable business, we had said a long time ago, probably about 200 crores is the right figure, right? Then that's when, you know, businesses start to produce money. Now, the question is how long it takes to fix each category. That's the function of learning, right? We are still very new on the bag snacks business. I would say it's about 3 years, right? And, you know, so there's still stuff to learn, there's still stuff to correct, and little things, which other companies would have built over a long time, right? Over 30, 40 years. But I think our learning curve is very, very sharp. Yeah. Huh? So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Sri. Thanks, everybody. Stanford, thank you for organizing the call.
We appreciate it. So, before we close, we have one question in the queue.
Oh, okay. You don't have much of a queue if it's one person.
We take the follow-up question from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Just one thing I wanted to understand. Why do we have such a long corn inventory? I mean, why do we need to take a call for 2 years and why not just buy it once in 3 months if you buy it? What's the problem with that?
Yeah, so there's no challenge today in terms of buying more frequently. Probably not like oil, obviously, where we buy spot. However, as you know, we've always sourced our corn from Argentina, which was a subsidiary of Conagra, which was taking the seeds from Argentina and planting them there and doing contract farming in Argentina. That operation closed down last year, right? And because we didn't have certainty about how we would replace that operation, that is the reason why we went long last year, okay? So as things stand today, we do not expect that at the end of the cycle, at whatever level of inventory we feel we need to start reordering, we will not be going long again in the future.
So, on a stable state basis, what kind of inventory would you be holding?
We are working on that. We have a little time to decide and figure all those pieces out, right? We are right now doing contract farming in some other countries also. We are working through. That depends on the harvesting season and many other things. So we'll work on it. As and when our inventory comes down to where the reordering level is, by that time we would have done all the testing. So we'll let you know that. Okay?
This is not some commodity which can be easily procured. You have to sort of go for a contract farming, or this is like you can procure it through global sort of exchanges or not?
No. It's all, popcorn farming is very specialized. And within that, because we use our own seeds and hybrids, it's made to order. Let's put it like that.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot, sir.
There would the IPR be. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Percy. Thank you. Stanford, over to you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participants, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Ajay Thakur from Anand Rathi for closing comments.
I thank everyone for their participation. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, thank you, Ajay. Thanks, guys. Have a good day, man.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.